WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And my name is Kevin Tachi. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening, and we have a jam-packed show for you. Actually, probably around 7 o'clock, there'll be a jam-packed air conference studio. More details in just a moment. Just some details on some of our guests this evening before we actually jump right to our first conversation. 7:30, we're going to speak with the Causeway Kings. Ben Rabinovich and Adam Clancy will be joining us. The Causeway Kings podcast, they talk about the Bruins, NHL hockey. They are experts on it. We look forward to that conversation. Chris DiOrio, he has run the Boston Marathon. We actually had him on almost a year ago to the day, and we talked about him running the 126th running of the Boston Marathon. Well, guess what? He's strapping on the sneakers again. And he's going to be running next Monday. I'm going to talk with him about that. And 7 o'clock, Cynthia Miller and the Unlikely Strummers will be joining us. They've been here a couple of times. Usually they travel in a pack. There's about 15 of them. And they play ukuleles, and they play songs. They play them really well. And we're going to do a little catching up with them. But we're going to start things off. We are going to speak with Dr. Tom Hickey. He is the superintendent director of the South Shore Technical High School. Some still call it the South Shore Vocational Regional Technical High School. I think I loused that up. But Tom, welcome to Monday Night Talk, or welcome back because you've been on previously.
Kevin, thanks so much for having me. Whatever you want to call the school, we know people know where it is, and I appreciate you giving us some time to talk about what's going on.
It's technically called the South Shore Technical High School, right?
It has a long title. It's the South Shore Regional Vocational Technical High School. We shorten it to South Shore Tech. We can't fit it on the business card, you know. So whatever is easier.
If we can talk a little bit, so let's talk about South Shore Vo-Tech. It draws its students from eight member communities. What are the communities, and who was the last community to join what you currently have for configuration?
Sure, Kevin. So South Shore was the second oldest regional vocational school in the state. It opened in 1962 with six towns, Abington, Cohasset, Hanover, Norwell, Rockland, and Scituate. And then in 1982-83, Whitman and Hanson joined the district. And so we currently have eight-member towns.
Okay. So now you are kind of on a little bit of a tour doing the town meeting route, as there is another community. Marshfield is the latest community to seek membership. Can we talk a little bit, what is the process like if a community wants to join the pack?
Sure. It's a pretty prescribed process. The town that's interested in joining would form a regional planning committee, which can be done through a vote of town meeting or a vote of the select board and school committee. And then that committee from the interested town would engage in conversations with our regional planning committee. It's It's very much a Department of Education involved process because our school district has a regional agreement, and the Department of Education has to also agree to the contents of the regional agreement. So, as you said, I'm going around to town meetings this spring season with amendments to our regional agreement. I'll be at Scituate town meeting later tonight, and the purpose is to make some changes, and some of those changes include Marshfield joining the district. And if it is approved by two-thirds of our member towns, as well as the town of Marshfield, they would become an official member as of July 1st, 2024.
My goodness. Well, adding a new town cause change within the school, what happens if this is successful?
Well, I think there are two exciting things to talk about. First of all, we're helping to provide access to vocational technical education, something that we know is increasingly popular with families. And we're in an area of the state where not every community in our region has direct access. We in the vocational community want to continue to advocate for more state assistance so that the ability to expand access isn't as expensive at the lower at the local level. And so we're promoting some legislation, and the majority of our legislative delegation has been enthusiastically supporting House Bill 238, Senate Bill 274, which is an act to improve access, opportunity, and capacity, not just for regional voc techs, but for any schools that offer Chapter 74 programs. There's got to be a bigger state investment to help offset the costs at the local level. What happens if Marshfield joins, Kevin? Well, the exciting news for us at South Shore is that the timing couldn't be better because we are in the pipeline with the Massachusetts School Building Authority. We were invited in a little over a year ago, and with that, we've gotten initial approval to explore options for an expanded high school. Currently, we're pretty much maxed out at 650 students, and we're going to be studying over the next year the potential to have a school that could be anywhere from 650 to 975 students. We consistently have a waiting list, and being in the MSBA pipeline is the best way to help address the demand. But having Marshfield as a partner means that we'll also be able to, in this true spirit of regionalization, get the best possible school that the region can afford to move vocational education deeper into this century.
If we can digress just for half a second, I want to come back to the MSBA building program and being invited into it. But I want to talk a little bit. You have a new administration. Have you had conversations with the governor's team? And have you had a chance to look at the budget, the governor's budget proposal? How friendly is it to, when it comes to Chapter 74 and to, you know, schools like yours?
I haven't personally had any direct communication. I'm very happy with the governor's initial budget, the full funding of the Student Opportunity Act. At the end of the day, helps to offset operating costs that we and other schools have. So I was pleased to see an increase in Chapter 70 aid that went along hand in hand with an increase of in-district enrollment. So my initial reaction is definitely positive.
Okay. And you know, anytime I've had a chance to speak with school leaders, folks who are, you know, in the stakeholders when it comes to education, you know, one of the main concerns is the formula, you know, the funding formula. Is that something that necessarily has an effect on South Shore VoTech, or is it more or less the member towns themselves and the funding they get?
It is. We are part of that same funding formula. It is very complicated at times to explain. It's not as simple as the number of children from your town in proportion to the overall budget. But we have great working relationships with our towns, and we stay in regular communication to help unpack these numbers. When a new governor takes over, there is a delay in the release of that first budget. And so that, in some respects, we lose a little bit of time in the budget planning process. Normally, it's the last week of January. Governor Healey and her team did a great job of getting out as soon as they could in late February. So we had a little less time this year, but certainly as we go forward, we're able to explain how the numbers are derived, both a combination of the Chapter 70 Foundation budget formula, as well as the rest of our regional agreement, which apportions costs for debt and capital expenses. And so, again, having good working relationships with our towns helps to explain the numbers. The numbers may not always be ideal from one fiscal year to the next, but at least we do our best to explain how we arrive at those numbers in the most transparent way possible. It is complicated, though.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are fortunate to be speaking with Dr. Tom Hickey, Superintendent Director of the South Shore Technical High School. Again, he says it's a lengthy name. They've shortened it. Probably one of the best when it comes to school committee, when it comes to sitting down and hearing how school committees and the folks who lead them, like the superintendent directors. Tom is probably one of the best. I've had a front row seat for many years to see Tom as he talks them through, as he talks the committee and the community through what's happening with the budget, the monies, and there's always a plan. Probably the first place that I saw zero budgeting when it came to building a budget, not necessarily going, hey, we had, you know, $80,000 last year. We're going to build from that. No, you have to, as a department, you have to build from the ground up. And so that was one of the things that I've always really appreciated about Tom and how Tom goes about things. And having him on as a guest is fantastic as well. I want to go back to talking about the MSBA. I saw some pictures, some photographs and an article in the Patriot Ledger. And I guess not too long ago, you hosted folks from the Mass School Building Authority and kind of gave them a tour around the school. Is that accurate?
Yes, that was part of the process. This was a long time coming. I know a lot of your listeners live in communities where they've waited several years for MSBA to be able to invite them in. We were on our seventh try, mm-hmm. Essentially explaining that a 1962 original school building. We are very proud of how well we've maintained the building, and we just need a more modern building and more space. This was part of a tour for members of MSBA back when they were doing their deliberations. So it was certainly very helpful. They asked us for a lot of data, a lot of information. And I'm happy we've made the cut, and now we can proceed forward through the various steps.
So, what's the plan? Is the plan to build upon the footprint that the school currently is, or is it you looking? Is there a hope for a new addition, or is it a matter of build a new school and then level what's existing?
Well, Kevin, you're within your question. There is the answer. The MSBA doesn't ask us up front. What do we want? What they ask of all communities that are in this pipeline is set aside funds to study the issue and put together a menu of options ranging from fixing your existing footprint. So fix our existing 130,000 square foot too small school all the way up to something that would be brand new, separate and distinct from the building, and of course, as you said, maybe something in between, which might be an addition renovation combo. After that gets studied, the school building committee would then bring a recommendation to the Mass School Building Authority for approval. When I study the most recent schools, vocational technical schools on the Cape and in our area, when I look at other K-12 schools, it seems as though dollar for dollar, the cost between something brand new and something that has to be expanded, brought up to code, et cetera, the costs are very close. I would like the most affordable building we can get, whatever that looks like. I don't think you start with the most expensive idea and say that has to be it to educate the kids. But we do certainly know what we need. We need more space in our vocational technical shop areas, and our statement of interest kind of, you know, essentially spells that out. We want to be able to take more students and give them the instructional space, you know, to do what they need to do. The process you just asked about, Kevin, will take us through the second half of 2023 and into 2024. And it is our hope that if we can meet certain milestones, we will have a preferred design ready to bring to voters in the fall of 2024 or early 2025. And then fast forward through design and construction. And while I'm not going to put it in my calendar yet, I'm certainly focused on something around 2028, believe it or not. But and that seems like a long way off. But when you have, again, when you have the state stepping up to hopefully pay for a little over half of this, you have to be patient, and it's got to be done with a certain process. So we're just excited to be able to take the next step, hire a design team, get conversations started with our community about what is the vision of a brand new vocational school, what programs are we going to offer, and then look at our site. We're on a very modest piece of land. There will be certain limitations we'll have to live within. We have to live within our means, including the environmental area that we're in. But I have no doubt we're going to come out with a great model that we'll find support for the families who'll send their children to our school in the future.
So what is the process in hiring a design team? Is this something where maybe the school committee subcommittees will have discussions, or will the school committee itself be a part of this process, or is this something that you bring the information to the school committee, and it's stuff that it's, you know, as your monthly meetings, it's one of those things that are discussed?
Yeah, Kevin, the MSBA is pretty prescriptive. It's very orderly to follow this process. So there's a designer selection panel that is made up of representatives from our school district, but the majority of the panelists are from MSBA. And so in late April and early May, we will have a series of meetings with MSBA staff in order to look at the firms that show interest in this project. So the decision is made by the designer selection panel that is it's a collaboration between the district and the MSBA. And when that process is concluded, then we can take the next step. But I'd like to say that by June, we'll have that step completed, and then we can begin the initial visioning design process.
As a superintendent director, what's your vision? You're saying you're around a sub-600 students right now, maybe closer to 700. What could a new facility house? How many students could you possibly offer, you know, schooling education to?
Sure. So MSBA did some enrollment analysis looking at waiting lists and interest from our communities, and they gave us a couple of numbers that would be the high watermark. If a school with just our eight towns could be as many as 805, that's up from 650. A school with Marshfield could be as high as 975. When I have gone around to our communities talking as honestly as I can from my own perspective up to this point, I don't necessarily think we're going to have the capacity to build a school that could be 975. That's like a 33% increase in enrollment. I don't know where we park the student cars, but I'm not an engineer, so that's why this process is deliberate. My hunch is that the number could fall somewhere from between the 805 and the 975. But for however many kids we build it, we're going to build it with programs that are aligned with the local labor market, and we're going to have this. We're going to continue to have the same state-of-the-art equipment. So I think you know our school well enough, Kevin, for all the time you've covered all our meetings over the years. We're like the biggest ranch on the South Shore. One floor, 130,000 square feet. There is no way with our limited space that I think the design is going to be one floor. We're going to need a school that I think is multiple floors with our heavy industry shops, our salon, our school restaurant, our public-facing shops on the first floor, put classrooms on the upper floors, have a reduced footprint. And that should allow for more space for parking. That should allow for more space to redeploy our athletic fields. That's just a hunch right now. I'll feel a lot more intelligent on this topic if you are willing to invite me back in the future to give you periodic updates. But I think that's where the conversations will go with our design team once they're on board.
I definitely would love to have you back on and provide updates. Again, we serve more, you know, so many communities here on the South Shore. And the idea of this radio program is to share information regardless of what vein it's in, whether it's education, local government, state government, you name it, we do our best. I want to give you a chance to kind of share some information. You know, you have some great programs housed within South Shore Tech, including an award-winning horticultural landscape construction program that I believe just might have earned some hardware recently. Am I wrong?
Oh, my goodness. We're going to have to build another trophy case. Yes, they were at the state FFA, Future Farmers of America, competition. They did a phenomenal job. We put some blasts out on social media. Team awards, individual awards. Skills USA is another vocational mm-hmm. competition. We had our culinary team at the Pro Start Invitational at Gillette. We want our students to be in competitive, high-stakes environments. It shows them at their best, and they thrive. And this is voluntary. They don't have to do this. They are proud of the programs they're in. They want to show what they know. And I can't say enough about our communities who continue to support us to be able to provide those opportunities for our students.
And it's worth noting that the horticultural program is relatively new. It's only just been in existence over the past few years, right?
Yep, we're in our sixth year. I can't believe it's 6 years already. But again, with the support from our communities, providing the resources and the support from the state, I got to give a shout out again. The Skills Capital Grant Program that has been consistently supported by the governor's office, our legislative delegation. Every dollar that we secure through competitive vocational equipment grants is one less dollar that has to be part of a local assessment. Any of our programs that you walk in, I can point to probably over half the equipment and say the state covered the cost of this. It's helped us to modernize the insides of our building, the instructional tools that our teachers need, what our teachers, they do such a fantastic job, and we're giving them the tools to be able to deliver. So it's a local commitment to vocational education, and it's also the state stepping up in a big way over the last several years. It's a great formula. I hope it's going to continue.
And I also want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about the importance of when we're looking at the future workforce, knowing that you are, you know, that South Shore Tech goes above and beyond that. You know what? Yeah, you can go to higher education, but also that, in fact, that you have students that are able to enter the workforce because they have been in, you know, some of the programs that are offered at South Shore Tech.
That's right, Kevin. Look, we all head to the workforce. At some point or another, we're going to the workforce. Our students are ready on day one. And wherever they're going to go, one cannot take away the fact that they figure out something that they're good at, and that confidence is contagious. So even if I meet graduates from the mid-90s to now in the area, they will point back to their experience at the school, and they will say that they've built from that. They learned about themselves. They developed certain work habits that served them well. Sometimes work habits are seen, they are as important. Local employers tell us all the time, technical skills you can train for. If you don't have the right habits of mind, that is something an employer doesn't have the time for. And so we're putting out graduates who are adaptable, who are confident. And yes, if higher education is part of their formula going forward, if their technical area is going to help pay for their post-secondary education, what a great story to tell. Fewer student loans, perhaps. But they're going into the real world. They're not stepping foot into the real world the day they walk across that graduation stage. Our kids have already been in the real world even before graduation. That is something that is not going to change with a renovated school, a bigger school, a newer school. It's the people in the school that help to keep moving this mission forward.
Well, Tom, again, I want to thank you for joining me and discussing some of these key items, especially, you know, with upcoming town meetings that you will be attending to talk about hopefully adding a new community to the eight that are already existing within South Shore Tech. Anything you want to say in closing, or maybe anything that we haven't mentioned but is worth at least making sure we inform the listeners?
No, Kevin, look, I just want to say thank you for giving us the opportunity. For those listeners that are within our district, this regional agreement article is a town meeting item for in April and May. And I thank everyone for, you know, continued support, and, you know, check out our salon and restaurant. Check the website, southshore.tech, and come see us.
Again, thank you so much, and I'll definitely be in touch to have you back on for an update.
I appreciate it, Kevin. Thanks very much.
He's Dr. Tom Hickey, Superintendent Director of South Shore Tech, located in Hanover, and has eight communities hoping to add Marshfield as the ninth. We are going to step aside for a moment, but the conversations continue. Chris DiOrio joins me in just a few moments. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
South Shore hockey fans, please join us every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. for the Ted Donato Show, Ted Talks Hockey, on 95.9 WATD, sponsored by the Kaskin Flagon.
What is AA?
Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of people who have had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, visit AA.org. Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
And we return to Monday Night Talk. Don't forget, hour number two. We'll speak with the Causeway Kings. We'll talk a little about Boston Bruins as they're getting ready to enter the playoffs. And we'll do a little strumming with the several individuals from... the unlikely strummers, Cynthia Miller, and the unlikely strummers will invade the WATD studios at around 7 o'clock. But right now, we got to get a running. We got joining us this gentleman who's been on this radio program, a couple of different hats. If you may recall, if you haven't had a chance, you forgot, podcast is up. When we talked to him almost a year ago, when he was gearing up to run the 126th running of the Boston Marathon, and we had promised that we were going to have a conversation towards the end of the year when he was going to head out to NYC. Joining us right now, Chris DiOrio, marathon runner. Chris, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Good evening, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
So, you know, your travels have been far and wide. You know, last time we talked in regards to your efforts to run, you have under your belt right now running the 2021 Boston Marathon, 2022, and little did I know you also ran the New York City Marathon as well.
I did. On Monday, this will make four marathons within the span of 2 years, which is people have told me is crazy to just run one marathon, but to run four in the span of 2 years is interesting and odd.
Hold on one second. I believe so. Edward Perry, the prolific owner of WATD. So Ed.
Yep.
We have somebody I'm on the phone with right now. If the folks who are supposed to be here at 7 o'clock want to slowly file in quietly, you can allow them to come up here.
Okay.
If that's okay.
All right. I will bring them up.
Thank you. But they got to quietly come in with their ukuleles.
Right. You can't have a ukulele and be quiet.
I know.
You understand
Chris, my guest right now does not want to be serenaded. So let me continue talking to this gentleman.
All right, you talk to Chris, and I will bring you the music.
Thank you so much.
If they could play something that I'll sing, I'll be happy to stay on.
Like It's a Small World After All?
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
And they referenced that because as one of his things to motivate him, we've had a prior conversation, you know, to raise funds. He actually allowed folks to donate, and part of the donation was they could pick what song would be playing in his, whatever the device was that he was going to be listening to while he was making the 26-mile trek. And I believe It's a Small World, after all, was one of those songs, no?
It absolutely was. I'm not... A Disney fan by any means.
Correct.
And quite the opposite. So a very good friend of mine, when I put up the notion of you know, donate some money and you can pick a song, decided to make me buy the 17-minute version that they play inside the ride. So it's not just a little three-minute hit with a couple of choruses and off you go. This is like the Inagata DeVita of Disney.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just plays on, and it hit me right in the third hill last year, right after the Newton City Hall, and all of a sudden It's a Small World came on. I let it go for about 4 or 5 minutes just because, you know, I didn't want to be stricken dead for not, you know, adhering to my, you know, what I said I would do. But I had to fast forward a little bit after the fifth time through.
So what was it like? What was it like to prepare for New York City? Was it any different?
I used the same program. Because, you know, one of the many things that my father taught me, you know, is you dance with who brought you. And, you know, the program worked for Boston, you know, the two times that I ran it. So I wanted to adhere to the same type of build-up program. It's a 20-week program to get ready for a marathon. Some are 16 weeks. I use a 20. But the only difference, many differences between Boston and New York, but Boston is known for Heartbreak Hill. Boston is known for the Newton Hills, the big, you know, that 4 mile stretch where you're gaining elevation with every mile. And it's the pain at that point, putting those hills near the end of the race, where you're about to hit the wall. In New York, the hills are the bridges, and they hit you with a 2 mile hill as soon as you cross the start line. You're going over the Verrazano Bridge, and it's 1 mile up, 1 mile down. So you have to train and adjust the hill training to go out not too fast. Just you're not going to beat the hill to the top, so just take the hill as it comes. Don't worry about, you know, what it's going to take out of you, but, you know, understand that the hardest hill you're going to go over is right at the beginning of the race, and most of New York is relatively flat with some rolling hills until you get, you know, to Central Park. But Boston has those hills that punch you in the gut at the end. New York hits you at the beginning.
That is so interesting. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me as though that maybe doing Boston not once but twice kind of was something that helped you. Do New York City.
In terms of the distance, it was an absolute help. I don't know that I could have done New York first and then done Boston, because the feel of Boston is different. Having done what I would consider the harder of the two races in terms of the what it does to your body, having done that twice first allowed me to ease into New York and be able to, you know, have some, if not institutional knowledge, but just some knowledge of self, that this is what I'm going to have to do in the beginning, as opposed to placing that energy at the end, recognizing that getting that big burst out first was going to be beneficial, and then the rest would be easier, if not, you know, their own complications in New York, but it's a different style of complication than what you would find in the Boston course.
Now, you and I have had the discussion, and you have admittedly said you are not the young man you once were.
Oh, no.
Okay. So, me, it would be it would be something, if I ran the Boston Marathon, it would be one and done for the year. But you managed to run, not one, but two 26-mile marathons in a calendar year. You're actually getting ready to run your third one within a year. What is it like?
It hurts. Everything, you know, as the old TV, everything hurts and I'm dying. But, you know, I am dealing with a different body than I was 2 years ago. Not that drastic a difference, but, you know, the machine stops working the same way. And so you have to adjust and you improvise and you overcome certain challenges. I'm dealing with a little bit of a gimpy, you know, hamstring and left knee right now that's, you know, giving me, it's more, more present and more annoying. It's not something that's going to stop me, quite frankly. Not a whole lot is going to stop me at this point. But what I say to myself now, because I'm an older person, I'm 56 years old now, but I'm 56 years old and I'm pushing 300 pounds. and I'm still getting out there, and it hurts. It's a different kind of pain. It's a different kind of strain on the body, but I'm just doing it for the 20 weeks of the training, and then probably 5.5 to 6.5 hours on the course, depending on the weather and what happens. But that's just a small, finite amount of time compared to the amount of pain and stress and agony that the families and kids that I'm running for have to go through. And that's really one of the driving forces for me, is not just the challenge of doing something that people look at me, and if I played two truths and a lie, and I said, and one of my statements was, I've run 3 marathons and I'm about to run 4, they'd look at me and say, well, that's the lie, and they'd be wrong. But I'm running not just to prove that I can, because I don't need to prove that anymore. I'm running for these kids.
Right.
This is my third time running for Mass General Hospital's Pediatric Cancer Clinic. And, you know, our team right now, we've got a goal of raising $1.7 million as a team. There's 135 of us as part of this team, and we're a few hundred thousand dollars short, but you know, a good portion, one of the larger portions of funds that comes in during the last week, and especially on marathon day. So it never stops. You know, you're constant, and every dollar that we raise, you know, goes towards research for a cure, but it also goes to help these kids just ease their lives as they're going through treatment and as they're going through everything that they have to go through, and helping their families, you know, get through the things that they have to go through. Having kids, for, you know, from, you know, in 9-month-old children with cancer to, you know, up into the, you know, the teens. You can look at people who smoke 2 packs a day, and you can feel that something that happens to them is tragic. But there was a choice involved. These kids have not made a choice. You want to talk tragedy, that's the tragedy.
Right.
So every step I take is with these kids in mind.
Huh. Well, so let me ask you this. When you ran New York, did you also run it for MGH?
No, in New York, I ran for Sandy Hook Promise. Again, another, you know, for children's charity, for want of a better term. But, you know, Sandy Hook Promise was created 10 years ago after the, 10 years, I believe it was 10 years ago as well, after the Sandy Hook shootings at Newton, in Newton, Connecticut. Mark Barden and his, you know, his lost his son, 6-year-old. 20 kids died in that shooting, all under the age of 8. And so the families there in Newton created Sandy Hook Promise to work towards sensible gun legislation, sensible, you know, things for schools to address issues, to be preventative and not, you know, reactive, to, you know, if you look at a kid that seems like it almost seems like profiling, but, you know, helping kids say things that are bothering them instead of bottling it all up inside. You know, Sandy Hook was able to stop, by numbers, according to law enforcement around the country, Sandy Hook Promises programs were able to prevent 168 mass shootings just through their programmatic work. And so, you know, running for them and raising money for them with the Sandy Promise team was also a tremendous honor, a tremendous joy, especially given the anniversary.
Wow. Now, do you have a dollar amount that you have raised so far? And
everybody who runs for a charity, there are people who qualify, who run a certain time, and they qualify for the marathon. But John Hancock and the Boston Athletic Association, a number of other partner charities, work with them to give out charity bids. And the 47 different partner charities with Boston Athletic Association, Mass General being a partner with John Hancock, who is the primary marathon sponsor up until this year. Next year, we start with Bank of America, apparently. But they give out bibs to charities that they're affiliated with, and that comes with a cost. So you don't have to qualify, but you have to raise a certain amount of money. The minimum amount most charities will ask you to raise is $5,000. Mass General asks you to raise $7,500. They're, the majority of the charities under John Hancock's banner are raising $7,500 for each person. So when you look at the amount of money that all of these charities are raising, it's approximately $40 to $50 million every year from charity bibs, just from the John Hancock folks, not counting the other 47 charities, like the Teddy Bruschi's. You know, Teddy Bruschi has a charity. Boston Children's Hospital has their own. So I've raised $7,500. At this point, I'm up over $13,000, with still a week to go and stuff from Marathon Day. So I've met my goal and then some over the course of the last 3 years with MGH. We've now got up over $35,000 just through my fundraising for them. And in the 3 years for Mass General, we're up close to $6 million for children's charities through the Pediatric Cancer Clinic, also through their emergency services unit, which was created after the Marathon bombing, which, again, this is the 10-year anniversary of the Marathon bombing, so it has extra special significance to run again this year because it's running with those people, and, you know, with Martin Richard and you know, the folks like that who lost their lives on Marathon Monday 10 years ago. A lot of folks who ran the marathon that day and have not even been downtown in Boston because of the fear of what happened on that day are going to be out on that course this year running the marathon again. It's these people are a special group, this 1%. That, you know, normally if I'm here talking to you about the 1%, I'm speaking about it negatively. But here I'm talking about the 1% of people in the world that will get out and run a marathon. And then you've got folks who are running a marathon and then running it for a cause, like pediatric cancer, like Children's Hospital, like Teddy's, you know, Teddy's people. Doug Flutie has a charity for autism awareness. There's countless people out there. And they raise millions and millions of dollars every year. The marathon is not just an event for spectators. It's an event that does tremendous good throughout the community every year.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. If folks still want to donate to your cause, to what you're running for, and in doing so, knowing that this is the 10th anniversary of the tragic event that took place 10 years ago, how can they do that?
There are multiple ways. You can find me on a fundraising platform called Give and Gain, GiveenGain.com. And you can simply search my name as a fundraiser, and you'll find me there. You can also find me on social media at PC DiOrio on Facebook and Instagram, and everything that I post about the marathon is a public post, so you're not going to find anything that's untoward or not anything you're looking for. But I also have a Facebook page called Chris Runs Marathons, and you know, I post things there as well, and you can donate at the, you know, there's a link, there's hundreds of links that I've placed over the course of the last 4 to 5 months that are all about fundraising, and I'd love to get up over $15,000. I think that'd be a phenomenal goal, because once I set that goal this year, that's the one I have to break for next year. So I'd love to set a good number again this year and then beat it next year again.
Is weather going to be a factor? We're experiencing a trend of warm weather over the next week.
People are afraid. If you go on, like, there are a number of social media pages that you're all marathon runners, and it's the big question now. Now that, it used to be, when's the app coming out so we can track runners? Mm-hmm. Now it's, what's the weather going to be? And you've got, 25 different weather forecasts coming in at any given time and different apps that are telling you different things. The only thing that will stop or potentially slow down the start of a marathon is if there's a thunderstorm happening at the start. If there's, active sun, if there's lightning in the sky, that will likely cause them to pause things. But if folks remember 2018, that was done in a torrential downpour with, 45-degree weather. Des Linden wins it, the American runner wins it for on the women's side. running, you know, she changed shoes multiple times because your shoes get waterlogged running through the puddles. And just, you can get the iconic picture of her in a clear poncho, you know, crossing the finish line, and you can barely see her through the rain. I'm actually praying for rain. The ideal weather for me to run is 55 degrees and a little bit of moisture in the air. I'll run in that all day long, and I'm going to be running all day long anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I'll still be, I would just as soon have that than what I had in New York, which is, you know, 79 degrees when I got over the bridge, and it just stayed warm all day. It knocked out a lot of runners. So 55 and wet is going to be perfect, and that's what we're looking for, hopefully.
Well, Chris, that ends our time, but I want to wish you the best of luck. And we'll have you back for another update as to how your run was and what your next endeavors will be. So best of luck, my friend.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Kevin. Have the Unlikely Strummers play Dirty Water for me. That'd be fabulous.
You got it. There he is. Chris DiIorio, Boston Marathon runner, running the 127th annual running of the Boston Marathon. That's it. Hour number one, gone in the books. Hour number two ahead here on Monday Night Talk. Stay tuned.
FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Oh, it's a long way down.
Folks, is the Unlikely Strummers, who, as I said, they were going to invade the studio, and they did. Actually, they were trying to invade during the last. Now, who's this young lady right here? No! Don't turn around. You.
Me.
Were you the one who tried to come in earlier? Was Ed bringing you in?
No.
One of you was brought in by Ed. No. Okay.
That wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
I would have invaded.
Okay. Of course, Cynthia Miller is my contact. And the one we've had ongoing dialogue, and as I said off mic in between the news, was this if I see a couple of repeat offenders who are part of the Unlikely Strummers. For folks who don't know, Cynthia, what are the Unlikely Strummers?
Well, hi, Kev. And first of all, thanks for having us here. This is so much fun to come back and see you. The Unlikely Strummers, we're a ginormous ukulele group.
Wow, there's a lot of you.
There are a lot of us, and we're really squeezed into the studio here. But we're from all over southern Massachusetts and northern Rhode Island. We've got pretty much every corner represented here, and we've been together for about 5.5 years.
I have to say, it was the harmonies, like the not to say the last time you were here, the last couple times you were here, but I kind of hear growth. Is that weird? Is that weird?
Well, it's been 4 years, honey.
It has. That's right. What did you guys do during COVID? Because that's when the last time you were here.
We had so much fun.
Did you?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. We did. Yeah. We played right through COVID.
Did you now?
We did.
Now, did you do it virtually, or did you guys all? Okay,
all
right.
All of the above. We got together on Zoom for rehearsals, but we also started all these little video series, and we did the 12 Days of Christmas, and we started out with a video series called Movin' Right Along, adapted from the Muppets song. And we had these unusual forms of transportation, like the zoo train and a tugboat. And we had so much fun. And we went out and did little videos each week with a different vehicle and adapted the song to whatever the vehicle was.
So how many members are part of the Unlikely Strummers? Has it been like an ebb and a flow, like you grow and you lose some?
Yeah,
or is it just
that doesn't happen?
No.
That doesn't happen. We're kind of like a little accordion maybe, but if everybody made it to something, there would be about 33 of us.
Wow. And what do we have assembled here today? Do we get a count? I mean, I'm thinking you might have about 15.
Yeah,
10, 15. There's more than 10.
18.
18?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's amazing. And I think you got the owner, Ed Perry, was very excited. He wanted to bring you in early. I'm like, Ed, I'm in the middle of an interview. Out. Respectfully, of course. But no, when we initially had you on, you were in a competition.
We were.
And so, but has that stopped? Are you still in competitions and fundraisers?
We're doing all kinds of stuff. That was the Battle of the New England Battle of the Ukulele Bands.
Which you won.
Which we won.
What?
Yeah, we did. And we also were the top fundraiser for the event. We raised over $12,000 for them.
Wow.
During the pandemic, we did an online auction. We got ukuleles autographed by Cyndi Lauper and Debbie Harry and James Taylor and somebody
Taylor
else.
Swift.
And Taylor Swift. And we raised it was nearly $15,000.
What was that for?
That was for the Ukulele Kids Club.
Is this a club that you guys regularly raise money for?
We do, yeah. A lot of our fundraising efforts go to the Ukulele Kids Club. They do fabulous work providing music therapy, ukulele-based music therapy with kids in children's hospitals.
Wow.
And now they've branched out to also have a UKC at home program so that when kids go home, they can still bring their ukuleles and get online lessons and keep learning.
Now, can folks still hire you to sneak up on somebody and wish them a happy birthday?
Gee, Kev, what are you talking about? Sneak up on? Did we do that to your wife, Kevin?
You actually did downstairs. She still mentions it to this day.
That was so.
She
fun.
Was. You guys were coming out of everywhere. And she's like, "What the hell's going on here?" I still have the video. It's pretty cool.
And yes, we do. We do still do that pretty regularly.
But basically, though, you would want someone to make a donation. So to speak.
A donation of any amount that's comfortable, and we show up, and we do the big surprise.
Does anybody else want to talk and talk
please.
About their experience? I mean, we get a microphone right here. I know I don't have a fun one to pass around, but if anybody wants to, don't be shy. Anybody want to just kind of talk about their experience at all? Say your name.
My name's Carol.
Okay.
I joined the group during the pandemic. The first rehearsal I was scheduled to be at, everything shut down. So I got to learn about everybody in their little box on Zoom, which was kind of good. The pro of it is I got to learn who everybody was. It's probably one of the most exciting things I've ever done. We have so much fun. We get all the comments at our gigs. We get, "You're awesome, you're great, we love you." But the thing we get the most is, "You guys look like you're having so much fun." And we do, because everybody that comes to us is having so much fun.
So we have everybody with different range experiences. Has everybody kind of been doing it for a while or not too long? Anybody?
A couple of years for me.
Couple of years?
Okay. Next week is my 5th year Strummiversary.
Wow.
And Liz over there by you is an original.
Oh, she is. Wow. And she gets a shirt.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. How many members actually have a shirt?
All of us.
Oh, are you okay?
Yes.
Six, right?
Cut right into this microphone. Go ahead.
So, I wanted to mention something about fundraising too last year.
we did fundraising for animal shelters and what would you call them? I'm not even sure.
Rehabs.
And so that was a lot of fun. And didn't you meet a sheep that was on wheels? And
Kiki.
Yeah. So a lot of exciting adventures. And every time we would have the fundraiser, we had little stuffed animals that people could raffle. And all that money went to the fundraiser for each animal shelter. So how many did we do?
A dozen.
Yeah. So that was really fun. Yeah.
And I have to add that during the pandemic, our rehearsals were outside. So we got cold sometimes, but we still persevered with masks sometimes and outside. And in the dark. Yes. And it was fun.
But the practice was all worth it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Do you want to do another song?
Sure.
What are you thinking?
Diana, can we hear you? Need to be bigger. Wait, we always have to. Our bass player is.
And I was going to say, I heard a bass in here somewhere too. There is a bass player.
Not only the shortest person in the group.
So that's a bass ukulele.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm stunned. Okay. That's amazing. How am I going? Why am I hearing a bass? Now I know.
It's all about the bass.
Okay. There it is. Can you hear that? Okay.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
The Unlikely Strummers.
I want 1, 2, 3, 4.
This thing called love, I just can't handle it. This thing called love, I must get around to it. I ain't ready. Crazy little thing called love. This thing. Gotta be cool, relax, get hip, get on my bags, take a back seat, hitchhike, take a long ride on the motorbike until I'm ready. Crazy little thing called love. I gotta be cool, relax, get hip, get on my tracks, take a back seat, hitchhike. Take a long ride on the motorbike until I'm ready, ready. Crazy little thing called love.
2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3.
This thing called love, I just can't handle it. This thing called love, I must get around to it. I ain't ready. Crazy little thing called love.
Called love.
Likely Strummers here on Monday Night Talk, 95.9 WATD. I think right around the corner, you have another. You got a luau happening up in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
What's that about? And then again, it's for the Ukulele Kids Club?
It is. It's a benefit for the Ukulele Kids Club. This is an annual event, and our friends at the Southern New Hampshire Ukulele Group put this on every year. And it's such a terrific event because it is. It's a big party, like evening, lays, all of that. And we just have a blast. There'll be about 8 ukulele groups playing.
Really?
Yeah.
And again, it's just to raise money, or is it a competition?
No, it's just to raise money.
And have fun.
Yeah, and we're bringing back the pink flamingos for this.
Yes. Yeah, what's that about? Let's talk about the flamingos.
Well, playing flamingos.
Yes, we were ukulele playing flamingos.
Is this like a costume?
It is a ginormous inflatable pink ukuleles. Pink flamingos. We did a Music Miles 5K, some of us from the group did, this fall to raise money for the UKC. And we went out and did 5K in these ginormous pink flamingo inflatable costumes, playing our ukuleles and singing.
So what's it like? Is it easy to be able to book gigs for your group?
Depends on when you want to book it.
Really?
Right now, we're pretty jammed through much of the summer.
How's that feel?
It's fun. It's very fun. And it feels really good that we just get booked so fast now.
How long have you been part of it? Your first name?
My name is Deb. I was an original.
You were an original. Okay. Yep. You know what? Where's the t-shirt?
I didn't wear my t-shirt. I didn't know, Kevin, that you wanted to see the t-shirt. Liz is rocking.
All right. Liz has got the t-shirt. Right.
Yes.
Maybe next time?
Okay.
You bring the t-shirt?
Yeah, I'll wear my t-shirt next time.
So give me a memory of performing with the group. Not Cynthia. So I'm going to hear your memory of one of your performances, either recently or during COVID or prior to COVID.
You know, I've been in this group for over 5 years, and we perform about 100 times a year.
It's going to be one memory. It's going to be something. Maybe a little kid come up to you and go, oh, my God, you guys are... I mean...
Oh, my goodness. I don't know about one in particular, but let me say the zoo. I really enjoy that we do performances at the zoo for special occasions and just for fun.
You guys do this monthly, right?
We are now.
This summer, yeah. We'll be playing monthly at the zoo for Dinos at Dusk at Roger Williams Zoo.
Now, have you already seen where your stage is or where you're going to be?
We have our spot, Kev. Yeah. We go back there at Christmas time. All through the holidays, we play there. And
pumpkins.
We play for the spooky zoo nights.
Really? And what's it like? Do you have folks who are clapping along? What is it like?
Clapping, dancing, singing.
How does that make you guys feel? Who else wants to step up to the microphone?
How do you feel?
I feel great.
Tell the microphone. First off, wait. What's your name?
My name is Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Hi. So music and ukuleles bring such joy, I think, to all of us. And it's just amazing to see that on other people's faces, too, right? Everyone is just so joyful at the concerts, and it's us and them, which makes it really fun. And I think we did a cha-cha line with the audience once.
Mm-hmm. We did.
Around a wheelchair. So that was kind of fun.
While you're playing?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And actually, the pink flamingos, we were at the Roger Williams Park, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we went into the carousel, because who doesn't want to go into the carousel in a pink flamingo suit, right?
All over it.
And we raced the carousel, but we found out there was a birthday party going on. And so we sang happy birthday to the girl. And she was so cute, because she's like... It was. I think it was like the best birthday ever. It's like, Mom, how did you do this?
Wow.
Yeah.
Now,
that was fun.
Now, is everybody here from the South Shore, or is there folks who might travel to be a part of this group?
Jonathan. And I'm...
repeat offender, yeah.
I'm a repeat offender. I've been in the group for a little over 4 years and have a blast. We were talking about the Roger Williams... zoo, that's my home neighborhood down in the Providence area, and there are others here from Rhode Island, and we've got people from the New Bedford area, Taunton. We're all over the place, and we rehearse in Taunton and in Plainville, Mass. But I was thinking about the zoo performances, and one highlight for me is I get to get out of character a little bit. And
why, are you a character?
Yes.
Well, I am a character anyway, but I get to reveal my inner Boris. So I do the monster mash, and I've noticed that when we first started doing it, we would do it several times through the Halloween, and each time I would get a little bit more inspired, and when people are right up there in front of you, it's like, okay, how do you grab them? And so it's really fun to get a little nutty.
You do the mash.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any other memories? Anybody else want to share?
I have.
All right, just come right up to the microphone. The microphone likes you.
Okay.
Right then. Again, say your name.
My name is Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. I really like animals, and I really like that we even have played to animals. And one of like the memories that really sticks with me is that a few weeks ago, and I'm getting misty, but we got to play for Spencer and Penny, the Boston Marathon Golden Retrievers.
Okay.
And 1 week later, Spencer passed, and unexpectedly a week after that, Penny passed. And when I look at, I can just picture their little faces. They were really listening to us play, and it was so inspiring that even animals enjoyed the music too. So that was something that really touched my heart. I mean, since in this group we had miniature horses that we played to. We had
alpacas.
Yes, we played last weekend, 2 weekends ago, we played literally in an alpaca pen.
Really?
And it was wonderful.
So you guys were hired to do that? Or you just did it because you're like, hey, let's play for some alpacas.
We filmed one of our recent videos.
Oh, Eddie, yeah, right.
Yeah, we're doing this unlikely vacation series, and that was a down on the farm vacation, and the alpacas all came and hung out with us while we played.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think they recognize us now because they really
you think
like
so?
Us. Yeah, they come right over.
Now, folks, want do you want to talk to the microphone and talk?
Oh no.
Okay. All right. Be anonymous. It's okay. Just so you know, radio is not a visual medium. Just so you know. Unless I turn the video on, then you're in trouble. If folks want to find out more, Cynthia, about what you guys do, they want to get involved, if they want to donate, if they want to follow you and
look on any post office wall. No.
Okay.
Or alternately, Facebook. We're on Facebook, The Unlikely Strummers, and we also have a lovely website that I try to keep reasonably up to date, and it's theunlikelystrummers@weebly.com.
Okay, so it's that time. It's sad because one more song, and then you got to go orderly because I got one more set of guests. What do we want to do? How do we want to close out this fantastic? Right, we'll have you back. We will. We'll have you back. How do we want to close out, Cynthia?
We're going to play one of our Muppet favorites. And we're going to play Rainbow Connection. And this features Liz on the banjo-lele, which listeners can't see, but they'll be able to hear.
My God, you guys really got the instruments. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow. The Unlikely Strummers.
To
unlikely strummers here on Monday Night Talk. More Monday Night Talk in just a moment.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield, it pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES, and thank you.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Balance 7 Dietary Supplement and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. Able to get all the strummers out, the unlikely ones. That was fantastic fun. I got to say, so joining me, he's in studio waiting for the arrival of Adam Clancy. He'll be joining as part of our conversation, the Causeway Kings, Tucson, Boston Bruins. Imagine what the chaos would have been like if I waited and had them be the last segment.
Oh, wow.
That could have been some. So I kind of moved things around so it's kind of easy for the flow, people in and out.
That was a great decision.
Folks didn't realize that, like, Ed Perry was trying to bring them in while I was speaking to Chris DiOrio. I'm like, no, have them be out in the hallway. It was fantastic.
That's where I helped out, started taking control down in the lobby there before things started getting wild and out of control completely, which, speaking of which, things are about to get off the rails.
Talking about out
here.
Of control, Adam Clancy joins Ben Rabinovich. I always struggle with your last name.
That's why we shortened it.
Oh, Benny Rabbi?
Rabinovich. It's a T and a Z. It's crazy.
So these guys talk hockey. These guys talk Boston Bruins hockey. They have their own podcast, The Causeway Kings. Adam, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for having me. I'm pumped. Sorry I'm late. There's a little bit of a traffic jam in the
hallway
downstairs. And
wasn't that awesome?
I got to tell you, they weren't giving up their lane.
No.
They were not giving their lane up. I can guarantee that.
Listen, they are truly from Massachusetts. They don't know how to merge.
Nope, it's true. They're good kids, though. They're good kids.
No road rage incidents, so that was good. You know, it was all calm and unsafe.
Very good.
Good.
Very good. Oh, my goodness. What a pleasure it is to be here tonight, Kevin. Thank you for having us.
Well, I want to thank you, Benny, for you kind of were the traffic director out in the hallway. Benny was Benny tried to make the second pass to bring them in, and I'm like giving the skunkiest skunk eye, like, do not bring anybody in here.
They were all in
all
here.
All of them were
every
in
every single
here.
Oh, yeah, person dude. Was in this oh, yeah. room.
How was that physically possible?
It was because it was
95.9 WETD. We make room for these
we
things.
We make it I guess possible.
So. I guess so. Wow.
So I wanted to bring in a couple of pros to talk Boston Bruins. You know, here we are. It was just over the weekend. The Bruins broke a record. Yep. They are the President Cup winner of this season. But so what, right?
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not that big of a deal, I would say.
Let's go back to the start of the season, because you had key members of the Bruins that were not expected to come back, that they had suffered key injuries. Brad Marchand was one of those. Charlie McAvoy was also rumored to. He might not be able to because he had to have some off-season surgery.
Well, it's interesting because knowing, you know, the type of surgery that Charlie McAvoy had. Oh, thank you. I had the exact same surgery last April, and, you know, my recovery period is, you know, 12 to 14 months, and I'm not even at 12 months yet. Oh, I'll be 12 months next week.
Goodness.
So hats off to his doctor and his team and his therapist, you know, and is getting him ready to come back. And, I mean, his name has been thrown out there for, you know, possible Norris Trophy candidate.
Sure.
Unbelievable.
Well, he also has someone who's, you know, hanging on the blue line with him in Lindholm, who Hampus Lindholm has to be a part of that conversation, though.
I mean, after what he went through in the playoffs last year against Carolina, when he literally got knocked to planet Mars, no one ever thought he was coming back.
Right.
And he came back bigger and better than ever. And he's got to be a top three finalist for the Norris this year. I mean, I think he's a plus 46 on the season so far. That's absurd. There aren't even teams in the league that are at a plus 46.
Did you expect, knowing that they had changed coaches, they said goodbye to Bruce Cassidy, see you later, and you're bringing in Jim Montgomery, and he kind of came with some alleged baggage when he was released. What was your thoughts? Figuratively, what did you guys feel their record would be at this point in the season?
Honestly, Clance, remember when we were in the offseason going, everybody abandon ship. This is going to be one of the worst rebuilds we've ever seen in franchise history.
If I remember correctly, I think on one of the Causeway Kings episodes preseason, we talked about the Bees possibly being a candidate to tank for Connor Bedard.
I remember that.
And
yes.
I guess you can say we were 150% wrong.
Flat out.
You know, being a retired player myself and, you know, playing at all different levels, sometimes all you need is a fresh voice in the locker room.
Mm.
And, I mean, obviously having Bergie and Krejci come back to, you know, keep that leadership intact with Bergie being the captain, I really feel like just having that new voice rejuvenated the team, and now look what they're doing. I mean, from top to bottom, there's...
But you also, you added a Pavel Zacha. Yep. Who has been, I think,
a great choice.
I think the Bruins won that trade.
Yeah, I mean, he just scored his 21st goal of the season last night,
yeah,
which I think is his career high.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie Coyle had his 15th. I mean, he in my opinion, he's the best third-line center in the league.
Mm.
There's just, from the top line to the bottom line, there's nobody that is weak. I mean...
And speaking of lines, we want to make sure we also get tip of the cap to Heath Gordon and Merrill Marshall, who are also the Causeway Kings, couldn't make it in, but we'll have them back in maybe sometime during the playoffs, hopefully.
For sure.
Hopefully the Bruins don't go the way of other President Cup winners and end up going out early, because we wouldn't want to see that.
I just don't get that vibe from this team at all this season. I mean, it's been such an opposite of what you'd have expected that... Every time you figure, okay, they're winning, our losing streak is inbound.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be coming.
When's it going to happen?
Okay, maybe not this one, maybe the next one. Guys, they haven't lost yet. I mean, literally, it's unbelievable what they've been able to do this season. And add David Pastrnak having a franchise 6-0. League banner year. I mean, that goal was so impressive, I don't even know where to start breaking it down.
Out of nowhere, you know, everyone's like, oh, if he hits 50.
60.
50 was just like a normal number for him, it looks like. You know, he's 4 goals behind Connor Bedard. I mean, Connor McDavid.
Looking
I
already too got far ahead of yourself. Guard.
But, I mean, 4 goals behind Connor McDavid. I think he's 4th in the league in points with 109. I mean, no one's catching McDavid from a point standpoint. He's at 151.
Yeah, that's absurd. It's
But going back, you know, are they going to be like other present Cup teams where, you know, they do great in the regular season, then come playoffs, they're not as strong? I don't think that's the case. I think that they're strong in all cylinders because, yes, you know, they played Philly last night. Philly's not the strongest team. I think they're like 23-30 or something like that. I don't even know what they're.
It's bad.
It's low. They had 6 or 7 of their key players out of the lineup last night, and they still won.
Right.
You had McAvoy out. You had Bergeron out. Krejci out. Orlov out. Bergeron. And they still won. To me, you got that depth that's not in the lineup every night.
Insert them,
you're just going to be just as strong, in my eyes.
How do you guys feel this team has performed differently under Montgomery compared to Cassidy?
Oh, I mean, it's day and night, honestly. You can tell the players and the coaching staff are working in perfect tandem the way it was almost designed to, But at the same time, it almost feels like this team started the season, game one, with that game seven feel. And I'm sure for a lot of those older players on the team, that 2019 taste in the mouth is still very much there. Mm-hmm. And that needs to change. So when you start the season in game seven mode and figure out how to play the entire season in exactly that, I feel like that's what they've done. And now going into playoffs, it doesn't even matter. Round one, round four, does not matter. They're playing every game like it's game seven because of that one game seven that they didn't.
I 110% agree with you, Benny. One of the things I think that is benefiting them this season is Montgomery is the type of coach. He's going to say, okay, if you're the offensive type of player, you go out and be the offensive type of player. Don't change your game. Where Cassidy was more of like trying to structure the team to be like, hey, if you're a goal scorer, but you're still going to be a defensive forward. Like, I think Montgomery is just kind of being like, hey, be the type of player you are, adjust to each other's styles of play, and you guys will just start to mend together. And I think that's what's going on. Yeah. I mean, Lindholm, McAvoy, they've always been labeled offensive defensemen. They now are having that freedom to be an offensive defenseman. Look what's happening on the back end. Same with the forwards. Pasta, he clearly nothing but a goal scorer. That's your job. Montgomery's letting him be the goal scorer that he is.
But it's interesting that they also, you know, there was a time under Cassidy where he tried to keep the perfection line together. And you know, you actually have two. I think back to the 80s and the 90s when the Bruins would have, they'd have that Ray Bourque and have one good line, and usually they would get shut down. That line would get shut down and the Bruins would just suffocate.
Yep.
And this team very much reminds me of 2010, 2011 when you can roll four good lines.
It's been a long time since we've had that Merlot line.
The guys that they brought in the trade deadline, Bertuzzi, Hathaway, like, they're all just, like, they're the perfect Bruin. Yep. They fit into the system. They fit into the locker room. And, you know, when you have that chemistry off the ice, it just carries over to on the ice. You know, that's a tight group over there. They're always together in the locker room, hanging out, whatever it is. And that's just carrying over to the ice. I mean, there's not one person on that team that thinks that they're better than anyone else on that team.
What has been the most memorable game that you guys can recall so far this year that you like? Are there too many, or is there one that sticks out in your mind?
I think definitely for me, I've lost count, but I think more the moments that they've made in history this season, it's so hard to even articulate how to even describe the true meaning of that to this town. Because let's be honest, I mean, the Patriots, I hate to say it, the dynasty's done and over. It is what it is. The torch in this town has been passed. Red Sox had their turn. Looks like the B's and C's might be up next. And it's just interesting to see how the whole season's gone. But as far as memorable moments, I mean,
is there one?
I'm going to go with, yes. For me, it's that return of the Habs for the first time, really, truly, since, you know, we've gotten out of the COVID era here, which, let's be honest, was a blur for everybody, including professional sports. And Marchand beating the snot out of that guy on the 8th spoke B center ice, that'll work for me. There's your moment.
I mean, I think for me, granted, yes, the game was against Philly, but I would say last night, setting that all-time win record with 63 wins, Pasta hitting 60 goals.
And 300 hat-trick. Career.
And on the hat-trick. Exactly, yeah. Think of it. I don't think they've ever had another player score more than 50 goals. I think the last person to score 50 goals was Cam Neely.
Yep.
And now Pasta's at 60. You know, they're at 63 wins. Where they got 10, 11 games left in the season?
If that.
Maybe eight or nine, yeah. Or whatever. They have a chance of getting 70 wins this season.
Unreal.
Like, I just think setting that type of record, I don't think there's going to be any other team to do it.
Well, we talked about it earlier on WMEX with Larry Justice as well. He said, well, I kind of figured one of the old-timer teams would have done that back in the 70s because they went on epic tears. And we had to do a little research and find out, Kevin. Well, they did in their respective right. But they had 78 game seasons, not 82. Mm-hmm. So the math worked out a little bit differently. It was almost impossible to do it like that.
How many did Esposito score?
Oh,
in his time wearing a Bruins jersey.
He was.
Is that a Google? Is this something
that's
should be
a Google 60. Question?
That's a Google question.
That's a question
right
of Siri.
He's got to be. I mean, he definitely would have done it, but Cam Neely would have been the more recent one to do it.
Right.
So if
and then Rick Milton,
done,
I think he did 50.
Yep,
prior to that,
yep.
Right?
I don't know. That's a great... We got two series on the set right now. We're going to find out who's got the quicker hand here. We'll find out here live on Monday Night Talk. This is great. Love it. Live play-by-play. No, in all seriousness, it's been a magical season. Everything seems right in the world. The Bees are on top. The Blues are falling apart. The Habs are sitting comfortably next to the Titanic at the bottom of the Atlantic. I mean, and the Vancouver Canucks have fallen completely apart. It's a beautiful time to be a Bruins fan, is all I can say.
Esposito had one season where he scored 76 goals.
Yep.
What an
answer.
70-71.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep.
But, I mean, also, you know, that's obviously an amazing achievement. That's, you know.
Unheard
but
of.
It's
unworldly.
Well, you got... No, obviously that's a completely different era of hockey, right?
Indeed.
The gear was different. The style of play was different. I mean, nowadays...
Sticks were different.
If a guy sneezes on another player too hard, it's a penalty. Or, you know, back then it was hard nose, you know, blood, sweat, and tears hockey. You know, goalie pads were wearing basically magazines on their legs.
And don't forget, we once interviewed Grant Fuhr, legendary Edmonton goaltender, and he said, we asked him that question, how do you think you guys in your prime would have fared against the modern NHL player? And he said, they wouldn't have had a chance. We would have pummeled them into the ground physically. They're just so much smaller. They might be faster, but once we get them, they're not getting away.
They're also, back then, those guys are just so much tougher.
Oh,
think
no
of it
doubt.
Nowadays, right? Whenever there's a clean open ice hit,
fight,
they always have to have a fight, right? Like
did back
have
then,
an
ice hit?
That was you know,
it was part of the game.
Yeah, if you didn't fight, you were gonna get beat up by your own teammate.
Yeah, right.
But there's always been a fear over the years that the European style of hockey would lead to less fighting and more. The goal score is the more points, pretty hockey.
Yeah.
Gary Bettman makes sure that European hockey gets forward. So I think we have a solution there. It's leave hockey right where it is and don't go messing with things that aren't broken.
Well, so here we are. There's a handful of games left for the Bruins to play to finish out the season. Who do we think they're ultimately going to face in the first round? Do we know? If you had your druthers.
The question is does it matter?
Yes.
Does it matter?
I
don't want Toronto. I want someone else to deal with Toronto just in case.
There's some teams. Listen, I have all the faith in the Bees. The Rangers are dangerous.
Yeah.
The Panthers are dangerous.
Yeah. They improved at the trade deadline.
Matthew Tkachuk is on a whole new level down in Florida right now.
Yeah.
There's no one stopping him. If my guess, he's MVP of this year.
Wow. Yeah. High praise.
Yeah. He's that good. They're a dangerous team. Toronto, I'm not worried about Toronto, to be honest with you. Yes, they have a ton of talent, no doubt about it. They've always had that talent.
Yeah, but they wilt at the wrong time.
They've
never
had goaltending. They still don't have goaltending. Yeah. And honestly, all those stars over there never perform in the playoffs. They call him Big Poppy, Austin Matthews. He's pretty invisible when it comes to playoff time.
Yep. We'll see how long it takes him to see what kind of money they offer him in the offseason.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait to come back on the show and talk about that.
He's having an offseason. He hasn't even hit 50 goals yet. Last year, I think he had 60, right?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So unbelievable.
It's I don't know. It's tough to say.
Okay. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. We got Benny and Adam, Causeway Kings, talking Bruins hockey, and we've kind of cruised into the playoff portion of our conversation. Looking at the Western Conference, who do you feel is going to be the who is going to be the cream that rises to the top?
Ooh.
Who do we think is going to make? What are going to be the tough matchups? And who is going to be? Who will ultimately be the Western Conference champion?
I'm going to be shocked if Edmonton doesn't make a real deep run into this playoffs. I mean, this is kind of their make or break year, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you're in prime Connor McDavid years. And, you know, recently, again, not to throw more show names out, but Gloves Off Hockey with Mike Milbury. We were talking about it. We had Coach...
Such a name dropper.
Coach Graves on. He said it.
Such a name dropper.
I love it, though. I mean, that's how you get these information.
Mike's
we had
guy.
Don Cherry and Harry Sinden both say the same thing. Connor McDavid is dangerous, but his window of opportunity is closing quick. And if Edmonton can't pull themselves together to rally around, quite frankly, one of the best generational hockey talents we might ever see on this planet, then it's going to be a wasted career, and that's going to be a real shame. So I hope to see Edmonton going deep into this one. Dallas is also a sleeper. Watch out for them. Robo is going to be all over the place, and Robertson is no joke. He is a heck of a talent in that team. And if you haven't heard the name, keep it in mind. You're going to hear it again real soon.
What about the Golden Knights? I mean, do they have a they stand a chance? I mean, they got a decent coach. That's
Eichel,
I hear.
First playoff appearance finally.
Yeah, they got a good coach. They got some good players over there. They don't have the goaltending.
Nah.
I know that kid Thompson has been playing good this season. But playoff hockey is a completely different breed than regular season. And I don't see Vegas making a deep run. I hope they do. I love Eichel. You know, local guy from Chelmsford, Mass.
Sure.
BU star.
Sure.
But I, you know, I my top team over there in the West, Colorado.
They won the cup
dangerous.
Last year.
You think they have enough gas?
They won it last year.
Yeah, they got plenty of gas. They're going to get Landeskog back. They'll get Rantanen back. They got the goaltending. Like, you know, just to touch on your comments about Edmonton. Yes, Connor McDavid can go out and score 4, 5, 6 goals a game. But this goes for any team. If you don't have a goaltender that's going to stop 5 or 6 goals a game, you're not going to win. Plain and simple. And Skinner, yes, he's done a very good job this year for Edmonton. No doubt about it. But can he stand up against the pressure of playoff hockey, especially in Edmonton?
Especially with that mustache.
It's scary.
Just saying.
What about Allmark? We know that he's had a Vezina Trophy-esque type of a season, right? Has he been hot all year and has been hot at the wrong time? Because a lot of times you want your... Tim Thomas, right? Tim Thomas, a sub-500 goalie, right? Got hot at the right time, carried the Bruins in 2010, 2011.
Sure did.
When Tuukka couldn't, right? So, just saying.
If he hasn't slowed down yet, he is not slowing down in playoffs.
I like the tandem. I like, you know, if something happens with Allmark, you have Swayman. Swayman is
no downside to that whatsoever. There really isn't.
And the two of them are basically two halves of one brain. So it's like, okay, so literally either one of you could go, and it's like either one of you went. So that's perfect. Yeah. Does not matter.
Exactly.
They're good.
There's really no downfall with who plays net for them come playoff time.
Right. And remember, we kind of talked about that very subject with Scott Darling, former Chicago Blackhawk, Stanley Cup champion, when we had him on the podcast not long ago. At least it felt like not long ago. I think been a while, actually. you know, he said the same thing. When he came in, and to be able to sit there and play with people that just a year before was sitting on his couch with his mother watching hockey, looking at these very same players, to have the... Crawford come up to him and say, hey man, we're in it together. This is us, you and me. That kind of chemistry and camaraderie is so hard to come by. And when you find a good mix, you stick with it.
I think we have the best tandem in the league.
That's right.
So can this team realistically win the cup?
I believe they can.
Bring it home, baby. Bring it home.
You think so?
I believe they can. There's nothing stopping them.
I'd like to quote the Blues Brothers, if I may.
Oh, boy.
They're on a mission. A mission from God.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, how much for the women? How much for all of the women?
Also, how much for the women?
Free.
I love it.
I, I think they can realistically win, but it depends on how they do their first round or two in the playoffs. If they have the same moxie they've had all season, I don't doubt it. I think they can.
I think that's the mindset they've had all season. They're playing every game as if it's game seven of the playoffs, no matter who they're playing against.
But you get some older guys. You got the Krejcis, you got the Bergerons who they're older. They're not the young guys who bounce back. You just got Taylor Hall back from a lower body injury.
Yep.
The Sanfilippo might come back as well. I mean, can they make it through unscathed? Because I feel as though they've dodged a few bullets.
They have, absolutely.
Totally.
I think all teams have dodged bullets from injuries, but with regards to the Bruins...
Well, look at Carolina. Carolina's... They've suffered a couple of losses.
Yeah. They don't count. That's an unfortunate story of time.
Losing Max Pacioretty a week and a half after coming back from Achilles, surgery.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's a tough blow. I mean, realistically, yes, I get Bergeron and Krejci are on the older side of their careers, but they're not slowing down. Mm. I mean, Bergeron's, 24 goals this year already?
Yeah.
And don't forget, both of them at one time were teammates of Jaromir Jagr.
Yeah.
So they've been blessed with the infinity touch. They're good to go.
I mean, and let's be realistic. If you look back at, was it the year they won the cup when Bergeron had the punctured lung, the broken ribs, the...
Yeah. Yep, that was his
game
7.
That was the year
they
won the cup, right? I don't think he's got those type of injuries going on right now.
But that's the makeup of a hockey player.
Absolutely.
You know, I hate to say it, but there's certain sports where, if there's no contact, they're on the injury reserve for 60 days.
Like
because
basketball, if you get a muscle cramp, they carry you off the court and you're out for 6 months.
Right. Not to be demeaning, but it is. I mean,
right.
There's a reason why people look at hockey players as the blue collar sports. They tough it out. Who do you think that the Bruins will ultimately face if they make it to the finals?
I hope not Colorado or Edmonton.
I think it's going to be either Colorado or Dallas.
Okay.
Ooh.
Dallas has the goaltending. Jake Oettinger is a stud.
Yeah, you don't want to face him, but I would appreciate it. In his career path, being a journeyman that he is and being with Dallas, the organization, as long as he has been. I haven't forgotten that last year's playoff
run. If you think of it, though.
At all.
Yeah, you consider him a journeyman, but... He's always been with the Dallas organization. When he turned pro out of BU, he had Ben Bishop in front of him. Like, do you think he was really going to play with Ben Bishop?
Obviously
no.
not.
No.
So I wouldn't really call him much of a journeyman.
I guess when I said that, I'm thinking more his longevity, because he has been around for
He's not even 30 years old, dude.
No way.
He's only like 27 years old.
Well, then I've been watching him in the AHL for a lot longer than I thought.
Go ahead. I think Oettinger is on his game. I think sleeper, Dallas, you got Robertson, you got Ben, you got Sagan's flying around still. He's back 100% healthy.
Right.
They're a dangerous team. Pavelski, I don't think, has slowed down at all since he came into the league.
Okay. So make your pick now. I mean, we'll have you back on maybe in a few weeks. Pick the team that they're going to face and how and
Cup win finals?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Cup finals and how many games will it go?
I'm going to say they're facing... Like I said, I like Edmonton. I like Dallas. They're facing Colorado, and it's going 7 games.
Wow.
Wow. I'm going to say Dallas, but I'm going to call it 7 also.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with.
Depending on if the Bruins win the Cup, does Krejci and Bergeron return?
Ooh.
Will they do another cap-friendly contract, respectively?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few guys that are going to have to do some cap-friendly contracts to keep some certain plays in the lineup.
Yep.
If I had a pick, I would say Bergeron would come back.
Okay.
I don't think Krejci will.
I think everybody rides off into the sunset, happy as a clam, completing the mission. That core moves on, and the new wave of the Boston Bruins begins.
Even if they don't win the Cup.
Even if they don't win the Cup.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining me. Sharing your hockey knowledge with our listeners.
Is that what we call it now?
It's been one hell of an evening after we finally moved out some of the unlikely strummers from the studio. But I want to thank you guys for coming in and talking hockey. Ben Rabinovich.
So close. Someday, Kev. It's all good.
Ben and Adam Clancy here from the Causeway Kings. Again, tip of the cap to Heath Gordon and Merrill Marshall. Hopefully, we'll have them in studio, hopefully, in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for having us, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. This is great.
You got it. And that's all the time we have. That's it. We've run out of time. I know.
Fresh out.
It's gone. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., we want to thank you for tuning in to Monday Night Talk. Be well.
They followed their coach to the high road, and the high road is the road to the cup. No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup. And they pour on to celebrate with Tim Thomas, their heroic goaltender.